Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Today is, well, let's see, what is today? The 25th. This is day 101, isn't it? 101 days, and it's 3:38. We have with us, we have Senator Michicki, Senator Reinbold, Senator Colgill. That's all that's going to be in the committee today. Senator Kawasaki said that he is going to be otherwise disposed today, so. And I should be because I'm feeling poorly, but we're here. We have Kerry on the records over here helping us, and Nate on the LIO. We got we have two items on today's calendar. Yeah, I was reading his script, and he's going to send me wrong. But we will take up the CS for House Bill number 48. We asked some questions the other day, and what we'll do is we'll allow the Senate, the representative, to come up and maybe go through what we have found out and see if that satisfies some of the questions from the committee, and then we'll get some testimony from the department. I think we have Division Director Kate Sheehan here, so I'll put that over here. Representative, why don't you come to the table? And thank you for introducing this bill. You certainly have got some attention on it. So last we spoke, we were trying to get some information, which we got a list of information that I'll ask Ms. Sheehan to be prepared to speak to. But at this point, I thought I'd give you the first shot at the questions that were asked before, some of this information, how you see it, and where you'd like to proceed.
For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent District 3, North Pole. Thank you, Senator Cockhill, for being here today. I know you'd probably rather be taking care of your cold, and I appreciate that in this building. The first question I think we should address was Senator Michicki and where someone could be hired out of the governor's office for something specialized at possibly a higher cost. And I'm going to have Mr. Henderson answer that question first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ramon Henderson, staff to Representative Tammy Wilson. So the answer to that question is that the governor would still have authority to hire someone under 3925.110, Section 20, which exempts the office of the governor from the Personnel Act.
Yeah, and the way I understand it, Ramon, is that would be not under the temporary, though. It would the temporary hire, that would be just their ability to hire broadly, right?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
It could be temporary, may not be temporary.
Right? That's correct.
And Mr. Chairman, just referring to the list, and we have made sure that we have made our rounds to all the different offices of every senator today. But and what I try to focus on was not the names necessarily on this list, but the position when it was established. And again, these are supposed to be temporary positions. And if you'll notice, they go back as far as, I think there's like 1989. There's some that's 2003, 2010, and so that doesn't seem very temporary. And not just that, you'll see that the position was established and then you have employees appointed at a different time. And for instance, just the first person position was established 11/30/2006, employee appointed to position 11/1/2015. Again, if these are supposed to be positions in which you're taking care of a specific need for a very short period of time, I don't know why you would establish those particular employees and then change them out to someone else if it was truly just a temporary that needed to be done. If it wasn't temporary, then they should have then gone through a different source to hire those individuals. Again, it's, for me, it's about transparency, making sure our full-time employees are all being treated the same way.
Okay. Questions on this? I have at least one question for Ms. Sheehan. So was there any other thing you wanted to bring forward at this point?
I said just thank you so much for hearing our bill again.
Thank you. Questions from the committee?
I've got one.
Senator Michicki.
Yeah, it's, these are all pretty low value. I think the highest I saw, and I don't mean low value because they're, I don't know, 30, 35 to $60,000 a year jobs, right? Looks like. And again, this doesn't get at that list. So I don't know how to emphasize enough on the record that if there were people floating around, these level people making $300,000 a year, we would take them out. These are folks that likely should have been hired not as exempts, that should have been in regular positions, so there is abuse of the system. I don't know what this list represents in value, but I do want folks to understand that if they were highly compensated people, we would be jumping on it immediately, with the exception of those that are physicians and things that we can't beat in the private sector. We can't contract at a better rate than a $250,000 or $300,000 physician or psychiatrist. That's lower than the going private sector rate. So people are very smart, but sometimes they get handed lists and they don't really know what those things mean. This also doesn't allow us to get at some of the really highly compensated folks in the agencies that are also exempt, as you saw in the book, like AGDC and Alaska Housings and things like that. So that's a different effort. But I think you're right. This brings it out in the open and lets the administration and future administrations know that if they're going to hire, that we expect it to be done correctly and our employees to be treated fairly and for the process to be transparent. So did I capture that correctly?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, absolutely. It's just a small piece. There are other issues that probably need to be addressed, and this is one that just came to the top. Now we have seen some others, and we'll probably look deeper into those.
Yeah, it's just to be noted, this is number 22 in the list of exempt positions, and so that shows there, even though there's some repealers in there, it's still, you know, quite a list. Anyway. Well, why don't I go ahead? Senator.
This is a really simple question. Is this biweekly pay? Every other week? Bimonthly, I should say.
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, yeah, this is twice a month.
Twice a month?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you don't have any further questions, I have one.
Just
for
a clarification, for the record, make sure that, again, this is Ramon Henderson speaking, some of these positions, they're more than 60,000. There's someone here that 120,000 a year. Just want to make sure that that's known. Mm-hmm. And also that there are items that are excluded from this list that are really temporary exempt positions, such as like elections people that come in and just temporarily do elections, and a few of those are excluded from this list. This was mainly to capture some of the higher level positions, not the really low level positions that really are hired for the purposes of temporary positions.
That brings up another question.
All right.
If this is bi-monthly, some of them are hourly. So do you know that all of the larger numbers are bi-monthly? That's the base rate? Do you know that for a fact?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, we're going to let Ms. Sheehan answer that since it's her list.
Okay.
We don't want to make it so that we're not being correct. So I think we're going to let Ms. Sheehan come forward.
Yes, thank you. Maybe we can get Ms. Sheehan. Sorry, I got distracted. First of all, Kate, thanks for coming in. I know you were under the weather last time, and we put your department in an awkward spot. So. Welcome to the committee. And is there anything that you wanted to say, first off, based on some of the questions that we've asked?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Kate Sheehan. I'm director of the Division of Personnel and Labor Relations. I think to answer the last question, yes, these are semi-monthly base rates. There are some hourly. I don't know why they're all hourly, but the attorneys, for instance, fill in for different attorneys when they're on extended leave, so they'd be paid an hourly rate based on the hours worked, but the other rates are semi-monthly rates.
So for a question from me, Kate, with this, is this exemption used because of ease of hiring? And if we take this away, does it it probably doesn't change our behavior. It just change. I mean, it doesn't change the fact of the need. It changes our behavior. So is this based because of an ease of hiring, or is there some special tool that this brings that is helpful?
Mr. Chair, it depends what the position is. Some positions are, it is an ease because it's just a temporary project that they're working on. Some positions are a larger project for an extended amount of time. So back in 1982, the statute was changed, and instead it was made temporary or a special inquiry. It used to be temporary and special inquiry. So when that changed in 1982, it did start being used for some more permanent type of projects, like I think in the last hearing, Senator Michicki brought up, like the gas pipeline. So there are other tools available. Obviously, if an agency is an exempt agency, they would hire an exempt employee. There's exempt positions listed in the statute. Governor's office could hire an exempt employee. Where it would be limiting is in the partially exempt, we do have classified non-permanent employees. So if you were doing a shorter project, that wouldn't restrict you from having a classified position that's a non-permanent. And I can't say for sure why things were set up a certain way. I can speak for the Department of Administration. You'll see several in Shared Services of Alaska and the Office of Information Technology. Those were set up because they were completely new divisions being set up. And so that was one way to get them staffed fairly quickly.
Okay. And they could probably do that under the governor's authority further up this list, if I understand correctly.
Mr. Chair, if the position was set up in the governor's office, if there was a high-level project being worked on and it was set up in the governor's office, it would be exempt right away.
All right. So you had a question, Senator?
It's not that important.
The other question that I had that lingered in my mind is the transparency question that was brought up by the sponsor. Looks like the others would probably be transparent. What was it that caused this one to be less transparent?
Mr. Chair, I don't know why this was caused to be less transparent. I don't know why that happened.
Okay.
Any questions, too, Senators are done?
Senator Reinbold, did you have a question?
Yeah, this is just a little just observation on here. I find this to be fascinating. I didn't even know there wasn't realize people actually had made it out to an R step. That's pretty significant. But one more time, I see the position time class temp and then LTEXE. What does that mean again?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, that's long term exempt.
Senator now.
Senator, I apologize. Well,
I think that's a dozen, 12 time this week. But anyway, so long term exempt?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Michicki?
So is everyone on this list from AS 3925-110-9 and AS 3927-011-K, because there are petroleum folks on here that I don't have the statute in front of me right now that have a different exemption, so it doesn't affect them. Is this list what we're repealing on Section 2 of this bill? Because it looks like there are a lot of others here that wouldn't fall under the bill.
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, this list is just of the temp exempts under paragraph 9. This list is not necessarily anybody who was paid under that K exception in Section 2 that's being repealed. This is just the temporary exempts, and some of them, especially the petroleum people, if you can see they were set up years ago, there was legislation in that placed those positions in the exempt service. We believe that some of them listed here as temp exempts are now actually exempt under statute, but they were never updated in our system. But this would not capture every state employee who was given a higher rate under the K exception.
Okay. Because one of the exemptions was oil and gas, and your highest compensated employee on here is at $168,000 a year, $7,000 bimonthly. So don't the petroleum land managers and geophysicists and commercial analysts, don't they have a separate exemption than number nine? Why were they used under nine? Because I remember, again, I don't have it in front of me. I had it marked up the other day, but there was an exemption for that specifically. And I can find it while you're chatting about other things. Maybe that was under K.
It might have been under K.
I'm sorry, number 14, petroleum engineers and petroleum geologists employed in a professional capacity by DNR and the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission.
Number 16.
Number 14.
14.
So why would they be on this list under 9 when they're qualified to be exempt under 14?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, we set them up before they were, through legislation, placed into the exempt service, and for some reason, they were never updated in our system. So when we run the report, it comes up that they're still temporary exempt. We did send this report out to all the HR managers and all the agencies to inquire what the duties are, and hopefully that'll assist in getting it cleaned up so they are appropriately categorized as exempt if they are now exempt under statute.
So one brief follow-up.
Yes, sir.
So those individuals that obviously the state needs, and they're high-cost positions, they just are. You're not going to draw them away from anyone else if you're paying at the cap of that other number. They could still use number 14 and bring on the talent they need and under that same part of the statute, under 3925.110.14. That's correct, right?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay.
So then the other question is, we're repealing the F, K section of 27011. Excuse me. That is a different authority given by the governor, given to the governor to hire beyond a certain step, right? And so if that goes away, they go back over to the 25110.
Mr. Chair, so that K exception applies to partially exempt to employees. It was put into statute in 2013. Some of you may remember it. At the time, there was testimony that, for instance, not every director is partially exempt. Not every director is created equally. So like someone like me, director of personnel, it's not as highly skilled as maybe the director of oil and gas. And so it was a tool to bring partially exempt people on at higher than the final merit step, which is F step, so you could appoint them at a pay increment. So it was separate from the exempts. The exempt, if you're truly an exempt, you can come on at different salaries. You're not confined by the state pay plan, the Personnel Act, like partially exempt are.
Okay. So in deleting this, that narrows down the ability to pay beyond certain steps, if I understand correctly, then.
Through, yeah. Or, Mr. Chair, yes, it would limit it to F step being the highest, or are depending on the position, setting up an exempt position.
All right. Questions? This is your turn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it looks like a pretty healthy percentage of these would go away in the future. I know that it grandfathers the existing positions, but these would not be possible. If you needed this talent at this pay rate, would it be possible to do it if it didn't fit under one of the – can I borrow that again?
Sure, one of the 22 –
Right. Under one of the 22. I'm sorry, there's 44, right? Yes, there's 44 of them. If it didn't fit under one of those and you moved to partially exempt, if you had to move to partially exempt, you have to stay below the F step.
Through the chair, that's correct.
So if they don't.
If you repealed this K exception. I should say that.
does that not become problematic when you look at, when I look at this list, I see a whole bunch of really obviously needed positions, and I see some that I question. On the needed positions, would you be able to fill those with highly skilled people that come at a certain cost?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I think it would depend on the position, and it may be more difficult for some. It may not be for others.
Senator Reinbold?
I like this bill more now than I did before. I'm ready to vote.
Well, I just wanted to make sure we got it on the record, what we're doing. Mm. And so that does bring a limitation, but it doesn't throttle the administration down so significantly that they can't go out and get the talent they need. I think that's been fairly clear to me, although this K exception changes how you might hire a director under a full-time position. So, yeah. Senator Machicki?
The F step also bimonthly?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, yes, right now our partially exempt employees and most of our exempt employees are paid semi-monthly.
So is the F a semi-monthly number?
Yes.
So the monthly is double that?
Through the chair, yes.
Okay, that wasn't clear the other day either.
Probably the difference between the exemption under K and the exemption under 9 or 110 and 011 is that one requires justification, the other doesn't. That's kind of the way I understand it.
Mr. Chair, yes, under the K exception, there does need to be a written justification by the governor or designee.
So, Mr. Chairman, I just have to tell you, if I can just right where you are right there, if that's the case, that completely eliminates my concern on the bill that information wasn't available the other day. So big difference.
All right. Thank you very much. So I'm going to open it up for public testimony at this point to see if we have anybody testify who might be interested in this. So we'll open up public testimony. And what I have here is Charles McKee in Anchorage. Are you on for public testimony? If you're on hold, Mr. McKee. I'll hold it. I might have him on the wrong bill. No, that's right.
Touch his name.
Mr. McKee, are you there?
Yeah. Okay, now.
Yeah, we can hear you now. Put your name on the record and give us your testimony on this House Bill 48.
Yes. First of all, my SESTA key account is subjugated, and because of the state of Alaska corporation had defrauded me in 1983 at Anchorage Times, lied about me, and I've never been able to regain from that damage.
Do you have public testimony on House Bill
48?
Do you have public testimony on House Bill 48, Mr. McKee?
To charge against my account, the subjugated account, as it is with the court system.
Mr. McKee?
What I'm talking about is the stimulation of judicial process on the top of the
Mr. McKee.
Facts to you. And pertaining...
Mr. McKee, if you have testimony on House Bill 48, I will open up the testimony line one more time. But if you can hear me, it needs to be testimony on House Bill 48. Otherwise, I will have to excuse you from this particular meeting. So let's open it up. And, Mr. McKee, if you can hear me, testimony on House Bill 48, please.
What I had set down to you, there was an employee with Chris Tuck. I'm in his district, Chris Tuck, and the employee was Charles E. Duncan, which wrote that commentary the state bank would help solve fiscal problems and prepare for a crisis.
I'm sorry, that's not on House Bill 48. You must be calling in for a very different committee. So do you have testimony in House Bill 48?
That is pertaining to the HB 48.
Dealing with...
He was a temporary, and I know him, and that's why I'm submitting this as evidence of the continued subjugation, me being part of that leveraged subsidy. Everything is created and housed in the court system. The Bar Association owns...
Okay, well, this has nothing to do with that, Mr. McKee. You can send your testimony into the Alaska State Legislature and send it to the State Affairs Committee, akleg.org, or .gov, and keep it on the issue of exempt service. So, any other testimony? Anybody in the room to testify? I'm sorry to have to take a guy and not be able to hear the testimony, but I didn't think it was going to be pertinent to the issue, so I'm sorry. With that, we're going to close public testimony, and so that brings the bill before us, I think we've got pretty much questions answered. Is there anything that the representative would like to say in closing? Is there anything that the members want to bring up?
Just one thing.
Yes,
I really
like
Section 5. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
excuse me, Senator Machicki.
I am always going to be very careful that we can continue to do our business as we need to. I like to also engage in things that the public gets enraged about certain things, and our job is to respond to them, but we also have to be able to do what we do every day. And this bill takes care of a problem but allows that business to continue by doing it another way and a lot more transparently and, frankly, a lot more fairly with the state employees that are working hard for us every day. So I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Motion to move the bill then?
Yes. I move the Senate State Affairs Committee that the Senate State Affairs Committee move House Bill 48, version 31-LS-0346, I'm going to start over.
Yeah, please do.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate State Affairs Committee move House Bill 48, version 31-LS-0346/U.A with attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection to moving the bill? All right. With that, let's the bill moves from committee with individual recommendations. We'll take a brief recess while we get set up, and we'll do a sign of paperwork. Senate State Affairs back to order. The next item up today is Senate Bill 75, which is commercial vehicle licensing required by Senator Costello. We have Senator Costello's staff here. And why don't you come on up, introduce yourself. The senator cannot make it at this time of the year. Many times that's true of us legislators, can't make it to the committee to introduce our bill. But I talked to the bill carrier, and you're going to do a very good job. So put yourself on the record and introduce Senate Bill number 75, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of this committee. For the record, my name is Joe Plesha, legislative aide to Senator Mia Costello, and I'm here to testify on Senate Bill 75, an act relating to a license to drive a commercial motor vehicle. Senator Costello sends her regards. She is unfortunately in committee, and I will be here in her stead. So after speaking with stakeholders in the trucking industry, our office identified two problems that they are currently facing. One, the demand for drivers in Alaska exceeds the available workforce. And two, there is a federal statute on interstate freight that mandates drivers must be 21 or older to carry any freight that originated from outside of Alaska. Senate Bill 75 intends to help address these issues. So first, it would change the minimum age requirement to obtain your commercial driver's license from 19 years old to 18 years old, which will increase the pool of available drivers. One of the problems the industry is having with recruitment is that because of the 19-year-old age restriction for commercial driver's license, they can't recruit young men and women coming out of high school. By lowering the age restriction for commercial driver's license by a year, young adults who are not seeking a higher education or going to trade school can then move directly into this line of work. This change will help increase job opportunities for our youth and help Alaska's trucking industry meet their needs. The second change that Senate Bill 75 does is it creates a subsection that will authorize someone who is currently under 21 but is 18 or older to drive interstate freight or freight that has originated from outside of Alaska. Currently, there are federal laws restricting drivers across the country from carrying interstate freight if you're younger than 21. In Alaska, this law is particularly cumbersome. So let's say we take a box of widgets up from Seattle and ship it to Anchorage. It's then taken on the railroad up to Fairbanks. Federal law then mandates that a driver who is under 21 cannot carry that or drive that that freight 2 miles simply because it originated from outside of Alaska. I would argue that this federal law is overly cumbersome and illogical. It restricts opportunities for young people and burdens our trucking industry. This new subsection would allow for Alaskans who are 18 and older and who otherwise would fit the requirements necessary to obtain their commercial driver's license to operate trucks with interstate freight dependent on a change in the federal statute. The purpose of this subsection being included does two things. First, we're hoping that if enough states make this statute change, there will be pressure on the federal side to make the change on their books as well. And second, if the federal statute does change, Alaska will be instantly ready to accommodate this new federal law. In closing, Senator Costello's office views Senate Bill 75 as a potential jobs bill that is being proactive if the federal statute for interstate freight changes. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm happy to take any questions you may have.
Any questions for Mr. Plesha at this point? We do have some invited testimony, so why don't we go to the invited testimony, Joe? And the first one is Av Thompson with the Alaska Trucking Association. And he's been on since 3:30, so Ev, are you on line? Can you hear us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Put yourself on record and give us testimony on Senate Bill number 75. Thank you, Ev.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Ev Thompson, Executive Director of the Alaska Trucking Association. The Alaska Trucking Association is a statewide organization representing the interests of our nearly 200 member companies from Barrow to Ketchikan. Freight movement is an essential element in our economy and impacts all of us each and every day. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 75. The ATA believes that lowering the eligibility age for an intrastate CDL will provide a path for a young man or woman to start on their way to a truck driving career. Both intrastate and interstate drivers are subject to the same driver qualifications and the same medical, safety, and equipment rules. The state of Alaska adopts the federal rules by reference in the Alaska Administrative Code in under 17AAC25.210. I might also call your attention to the fact that an 18-year-old can be issued a commercial pilot's license. Mm. Lowering of the interstate or intrastate driver age requirement to 18 allows a student to go from school right into training to be a professional truck driver. The CDL will not instantly create a professional truck driver, but it will create an opportunity. We think this is a great opportunity for our young people, as well as building a larger driver pool to help satisfy the increased demand for commercial vehicle drivers. Again, to reiterate, there is a commercial driver shortage, which will only get worse if we begin a major project, and the passage of Senate Bill 75 will help to solve the problem in Alaska. Subsequently, when Congress passes a law lowering the interstate driving age, Alaska will be ready. The Alaska Trucking Association urges you to move Senate Bill 75 with favorable recommendations. Thank you.
Aves, thank you very much, and being patient with me and mispronouncing your name. I appreciate that. Is there questions for Mr. Thompson? Aves, maybe you could answer one question. You talk about the shortage, but tell me a little bit about how you would anticipate using this to get high school drivers, because I know insurance costs are going to probably be looking over everybody's shoulder on how a driving program for CDL for that age group might happen. Is it an extension of the 19-year-old, or would there be, you think, special care taken for the 18-year-old?
Mr. Chairman, we've talked with some insurance carriers about that very issue, and, of course, they're risk-averse, so they're going to want to be sure that their losses or, you know, claims payouts are don't suddenly spike. Currently, there are different rates for different drivers. An insurance carrier looks at a complete company and factors in all those things and when determining what the premium is going to be. We don't think that there's going to be a huge spike. We think there may be some increase, but at the same time, if the demand is there for a driver and the company needs drivers, then the market will determine whether they can afford to pay for that driver.
Thank you. And I know that the CDL training course is pretty significant. I've seen some of the trucks rolling around. What is the general length of time for a youngster as they apply for a CDL and go through the training and actually drive the truck under that training?
Mr. Chairman, as a novice driver, there's probably a 5 or 6 week training course. And at the present time, the federal government, Congress, is considering legislation that will provide some entry-level driver training. And that entry-level driver training would be not only for 18-year-olds, but for any new novice driver entering the market, whether they be 18 or 40. And that's going to require some hands-on training, classroom training, on the job, in the seat training, so to speak. And that will be more or less out of our control, because I think the feds are going to dictate it. But you're talking a significant investment by the time you get your CDL, your six-week training, you get the piece of paper in your hand that says you are eligible to drive. Then you need to find a carrier who's willing to hire you and put you into their training program, because clearly a prudent motor carrier is not going to turn over $500,000 rig to someone who they don't have confidence in the ability to drive.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think that's important to have on the record for us to consider. Any other questions for Senator Machicki?
No, Mr. Chairman, I'm just being quiet. I've heard this bill, and I support it. I think it's clearly a win-win for young people in our state, particularly since we're having trouble filling jobs in many categories. This is one of them. And I, as Mr. Thompson said, I know how strict those training programs are, so it's not as though unqualified 18-year-olds will be driving. So I'm supportive of this bill. And again, I'm only quiet because I've already heard it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Aves, go ahead.
If I might, I said it once, but I'd like to say it again. You know, I call your attention to the fact that an 18-year-old can be issued a commercial pilot's license. So I think by virtue of that fact, we know that there are mature men and young men and women out there who are more than capable of driving a truck.
That is an excellent point, Aves. Thank you very much. Also under invited testimony, I have Don Etheridge. Don, why don't you come on forward here? Aves, thank you very much. And I don't see any other questions, so we can excuse you if you wish at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Mr. Etheridge, welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Don Etheridge with the Alaska AFL-CIO, and we are supportive of this piece of legislation. We have a lot of our apprenticeship programs when kids come right out of high school and get into the apprenticeship programs that are required to have a CDL within the first 2,000 hours before they can advance further into their training program. And if they're just out of high school and 18 and they hit that apprenticeship program right away, they're going to have to sit around for a while waiting to turn 19 so they can get their CDL. So we see this as a help for the apprenticeship programs to get these students through their programs and out on the road to work. IBEW of linemen, they have to have the CDL. A lot of our equipment operators have to have the CDL, and they gotta, before they can do that, they have to, before they can complete their first year of apprenticeship programs, they gotta have that CDL. So we see that to help. In a former life, I was a chairman of a board of at-risk youth groups that we put out to work on different programs to try to keep them out of trouble. A lot of them would get into apprenticeship programs. A lot of them would figure out real quick that they didn't like the idea of having to work for a living, so they'd go back to school, and it would help out. And I think that this would also help for that program too. And as far as for just an idea of the education it takes in order to get that CDL, that's a strenuous test to take to qualify to get the CDL. I've tutored several people after I'd gotten my CDL years ago, but I've tutored kids to pass that CDL test, and it's not a simple test for them to pass. So if they're going to put that effort into it, they have an interest in it. And the other important thing about this is under a CDL, you are open to drug testing to make sure that these kids are staying clean, because if you go to work with a CDL license, you're in a random drug test somewhere. So it'll help clean up a lot of that problem too.
Senator Reinbold almost did it.
So I'm a huge supporter of random drug testing, and that's a reason why I'm leaning, on supporting this bill. It does terrify me thinking that an 18-year-old is going to be driving a commercial vehicle. It just does. I mean, just an 18-year-old driving, period, is unnerving. But anyway, can you take a position on random drug testing of all state employees, legislature, courts, everything? I think it should be just a random for everybody.
I'm into three different random drug testing programs myself, so I haven't got any questions about it. For my CDL, if I'm driving, I'm in a random. With my mariner's license, I'm in a random. And so it's I don't see a problem with it if it's, but as a lobbyist for the AFL-CIO, I can't take a position on that because we haven't discussed it yet, but I don't have a problem with drug testing. I know that some of our programs that we have, we do have a double list. If you voluntarily go in and take a drug test, you can get on a list. And if somebody calls for somebody that's drug-free and has been drug tested, then those are the first ones to go out. So we take the drug testing real seriously in our organizations.
Senator?
Okay, so I know there's some really responsible 18-year-olds that are great drivers, but it's just, I had two teenage boys, so it was very challenging teaching them how to drive. But anyway, I know I'm coloring a little bit out of lines, and I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, but we discovered many years ago in 2014, I think we had a hearing in Hess, and we found out that through the EBT cards, they could literally take out money and they can go buy drugs with state funds. And I thought every single person that received cash should be getting drug tested. And if they shouldn't be getting that money if their P tests come out hot. So anyway, what is the consequences if somebody has a positive drug test with the CDL license?
They lose their license for a period of time if they get caught at it. And it's more strenuous than what a regular driver's license is if you get caught under the influence. So in our jobs, if you get caught in a random, you get fired usually.
One more question. So is marijuana, alcohol, and then any, like schedule 1, 2, 3, 4, was it, and do you know the percentages for like alcohol level in their blood?
Alcohol level is the 0.04. It's half what the regular alcohol is. And marijuana and any drugs that hasn't been approved by the federal government, we fall under that because we fall under the federal law and not the state law. And that's what gets people in trouble in the maritime industry along with the trucking industry is say, oh, it's marijuana's legal in Alaska. Well, it isn't if you got a CDL or a maritime license or pilot's license or that. It's not legal.
Excellent. That was very important. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Thank you very much. And anybody else in the room want to testify? I didn't have anybody else online. Anybody else? I have no objection to the bill movement. Let me take a brief at ease real quick. All right, since we don't have some of the committee members here, I figured I better take a temperature reading. And it's my intention to go ahead and move this bill along. And it's still got quite a journey to go, as a matter of fact. So, Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Bill 7531-LS0610/A from the State Affairs Committee with attached zero fiscal note.
Any objection? Seeing no objections, we'll move the bill from committee with individual recommendation to attach fiscal notes. And that concludes the business for the day. I ask members to stay by and sign the paperwork on the bill. The next meeting will be Tuesday, April 30th at 3:30. We'll roll out Senate Bill 116. That's a ballot custody and tampering and voter registration. Bye. He put down by Senator and put his name on a full page here, Senator Schauer.
Oh, this is all done.
No other business before the committee? We're adjourned.